Woe to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. That is what chapter 6, verse 6 through 7 teaches. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Well, we know what an ant is, a very busy, industrious creature, right? Among God's creatures, they are very efficient. They accomplish their tasks well. And so the wise man says, be like them. Be like them. We're going to talk about procrastination. And why do so many procrastinate? Why do we procrastinate? We may do it in different ways. We may not always procrastinate in every activity, but procrastination is certainly a human problem, isn't it? Well, there's probably lots of reasons. Some of it is that whatever we have to do, we're just not all that excited about. It's not something that interests us, and therefore it's easy for us to put it off. There are some tasks that are so labor-intensive. That goes back to our interest, I suppose. But we just don't want to expend that energy. We just don't have that desire to do that. There are other things that are going to be difficult, and though we want the outcome or the blessing from them, we don't really want to pay the cost to do that. It's going to be more difficult than we want. We're going to have obstacles. We're going to have challenges. We may even have setbacks in what we do. So therefore, procrastination to us is a much easier thing than getting involved and then having things to stop or more difficulty along the way. And that's in every area of our life. And of course, it is kind of related to the ideal of laziness, except for procrastinators aren't all lazy people in the purest sense. They just don't want to do certain things. And so that's us, right? And when it comes to our faith, when it comes to our life as Christians, probably one of the greatest challenges we have is procrastination. Why? Well, it's kind of like what I said earlier about the task. The task is difficult at times. It is difficult personally because we ourselves are struggling with things that we haven't reckoned with. As we talked about in class this morning, at least, what we say is certainly is going to be judged, but where did that speech come from? It come from the heart, come from the very mind of the person, is something that you dwelt on. It's something you thought about. That's why, again, we become who we should not be. We speak the way that we should not speak. So we got to work on those things. And isn't that a harder thing than to just say, well, that's the way I am. People like that. Well, I don't know that I can do that. Well, God is merciful to me. In fact, as we talked about in our text in James, he says, well, anybody who can bridle the tongue is perfect, and he can take care of, control the whole body. So he said, well, I'm not in that perfect camp, so that can't work. Well, I guess it is what it is. You know, people throw their hands up. A lot of people settle for mediocrity, certainly, and when it comes to faith. A lot of people settle for a whole lot less. And God doesn't want less. In fact, we're going to learn this morning procrastination is not a solution. It's not a solution for your troubles. It's not a solution for the problems we will face. It will not solve anything in regards to our relationship with God or His Son, Jesus. I assure you that if anything, it will cause us to have wasted a lot of time. Because we're going to hear, not in that day, well done, thou good and faithful servant. But we're going to hear, no, cast you into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's why I say, dear friend, we have to work on it. Maybe we've done it in small ways. I can confess that there are times that I don't do what I should because, like I said, I don't have an interest in the trouble that I'm going to have in doing so, the challenges. There's some things, of course, because I want to do them more, that I won't do what I need to do. We have desires, and we've got to reckon with those. And some of those desires, though they're wholesome in and of themselves, can draw us away from the work that God has given us as Christians, the life that we're to live, to be molded and shaped according to Him. In Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 1, The wise man again says, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do know not what a day may bring forth. The other problem with procrastination is that we tell ourselves there's another day. And so let's say as a Christian, you've become weary in well-doing. You've slowed down. Maybe again because you've been pulled back to the world. Or maybe because your life is overwhelming at the moment. And you keep telling yourself, I'll have tomorrow. I can start that then. Even as a teacher and a preacher of the gospel, there are tasks that I have put off that I shouldn't have because I acted as if there was a tomorrow to do that. I can do that then. I don't have to do it now. We surely have to prioritize, and that is at the root of getting rid of procrastination. We have to decide what is very important in our lives. We have to decide what is needful in order to overcome the problem of procrastination. Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 6, Isaiah 55 and verse 6, seek the Lord, notice, while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. There's another point to be made. There's going to be a day in which you won't find him. Not because he is an obscure person. It's because it's all settled and it's done. You have made your bed, as it were. You've been procrastinating way too long, and there's nothing more for you. Judgment is coming. And furthermore, there will be no nearness. You will have no proximity. I mean, there's a real sense, even before the day of judgment, in which we could have already seared our conscience, and there no longer, again, remains a sacrifice, Hebrews 11, 26. And because we have no desire, he's not around anymore. Not because he couldn't be, but because we have not allowed him to be. We have no interest in him. So, dear friend, procrastination's an issue. And we've got to resolve it. We've got to decide that we're going to settle this business. There may be some things in my life that if I practice procrastination, they will not affect my eternal soul. However, I will say this, that those kinds of things may inform me, if I pay attention, about really who I am. That if I'm willing to keep putting off even the small things in my life, that it may tell me a lot about what my character is, who I am really. Procrastination. We need to seek solutions, and I think we can. And may I suggest to you there are some. So you need to ask yourself some of these questions. I got three questions that we need to ask ourselves. What am I losing by putting this off? I need to determine, if I put it off, is there something that I lose of great value? Can I replace what I'm losing with anything better? In other words, if what I lose, what I get in return is much better, then it may have been worth it. But if it is not, then what? Can I do without those things that I didn't do? In other words, whatever it is that I needed to do, can I do without it? All right? We're going to come back to those three at the end. But I want you to think about that. What am I losing by putting this off? And can I replace what I'm losing with anything better? And can I do without those things that I didn't do? All right. That sets the tone and the tenor of what we will examine. The first thing that I want us to see, though, procrastination has to come to an end because we need to put oil in our lamps now, not later, not tomorrow. Now, I'll get to it this year, you know. It's kind of like the New Year's resolutions, right? I'll get to that New Year's. We'll make plans and we'll get all that settled and I'll have a good reading, I'll have a good work, and I'll do this and I'll improve that. We always got tomorrow in our ideal, in our minds. This church will do these things at this time, and we'll plan them. And there's, again, no reason not to plan. We need to, because, again, if we don't, things will creep up on us. And we have to make sure that we allot the time. All of that's good. We need to plan. But I think a lot of times what happens individually as well as collectively, we're always in the planning stage. Yeah, we can put it down on paper. We can put it in an organizer. It all looks good, doesn't it? Have you ever seen the person that just sits there and they make the notes and they get it? I mean, they got some good outline. They've got a good plan for everything, but they never accomplish any. They don't even begin to start on any of the tasks that are in the list. Dear friend, that's our problem often. We write down things. We put them on calendars. They're full. They're in our phones. They're on the calendar. They're on our refrigerator. Little sticky notes. But we haven't accomplished anything. We need to put oil in our lamps. Because though the Lord is slow or slack, the Lord is not slow, that is, or slack concerning his promises, as men count slackness, 2 Peter 3:9. And he is certainly patient toward all of us. That is sure. And he doesn't wish that anyone would come or to be perished, that is, but all to come to repentance. Let's be clear. We can keep putting off, and we keep making our lists, and we'll never get there. Notice these ladies here in Matthew, the 25th chapter. You probably knew where I was headed with this. It's a parable of the 10 virgins, Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13. Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil in flasks along with their lamps. Now while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight there was a shout. Behold, the bridegroom come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, give us some oil for our lamps are going out. But the prudent answered, no, there will be not enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. And while they were going away to make their purchase, the bridegroom came and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast and the door was shut. And later the other virgins also came saying, Lord, Lord, open to us or open for us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour. You see, these ladies, these virgins, the ones that are foolish, they had oil, but just enough for the time. They were waiting it out. They thought maybe, probably, expected that bridegroom was on his way and he'd be there and they would have sufficient as the party would begin. They didn't take extra along with them. So when they started trimming the lamps as he was coming and their oil was about to be light was about to be extinguished, they were short. They put off. You see, that's an important problem with procrastination. It always says that I'll have time. I can do this later. I don't have to have it now. Or maybe I don't even consider that I'll need the extra, as it were. You see, dear friend, we all need to be making our provisions. Just as we saw in the story of the ant from Proverbs chapter 6. He considers it all, doesn't he? He pays attention to the need. He's out there preparing in the time that's necessary. He doesn't wait because he's not going to be caught off guard. They're not going to be without food. They're not going to be without provision. And so as these wise virgins as described for us, they're not going to be without. They're ready. Is that us? It will be us if we're putting oil in our lamps. We're setting things aside and ready to go. Ephesians the 4th chapter and verse 12. When Paul concludes that there are apostles, prophets, teachers, evangelists, pastors, and so on and so forth, that he says their work is in order to, as he says in verse 12, to equip the saints for the work of service, to the building of the body of Christ. Dear friends, that requires preparation. That requires readiness. Readiness on the parts of the persons to get them equipped. Preparation. As I will be working in India, I'll have to be prepared in order to equip, because I've got some things that I want to accomplish, and I hope that will be successful, that they will be able to now do the work of the service or ministry, as we see in our text. And so it goes. We have to be ready. And he says it's an equipping. In other words, God has made the provision so that we can be equipped. He's already set things aside and said, here, you need to obtain this. You need to purchase this from me. And when you do, you'll be ready. You'll be ready. You got to be equipped. See, procrastination says, well, we'll wait and talk about that tomorrow. We'll examine that later. We'll see about that on another occasion. There's still time for all of that. No, you get ready now. You pay attention to what you're learning. You examine your heart. You examine yourself to see whether or not you're doing what you should, 2 Corinthians 13:5. And you decide, well, there's things that are just not right, that are not well here. I'm lacking some things. There's some provisions. If I don't have them, I will not be ready for. You know, it amazes me. One of my favorite historical stories was the Lewis and Clark expedition. I've read their journal, at least Captain Meriwether Lewis's journal. I've watched a documentary. I've read the books on their story and their journey. It amazes me that they could go that far and make it and have all that they absolutely had to have. Now, there were things that would run out, but they already planned ahead. Can you imagine getting ready for that trip? I mean, it's one of those three-year camping trips, right? Can you just imagine? You've got to camp, and you're going to be gone for a while. You've got to get ready for it. And it was just amazing to me how well they did and how much they had and all that they, and they understood how they could how to ration so that they were ready for. And they had everything that they really needed across the continent. On a journey, by the way, it's a great analogy, of which they had almost absolutely no knowledge of where they were going. They knew where they were heading, but they didn't know what was over there. They didn't understand what was ahead. They didn't know the dangers. They couldn't even imagine the mountains when they came to them. They had thought that they were going to just pass over them a day's journey. It took almost a week to cross the Bitterroot Mountains. They had never seen anything like that. They thought they were approaching them when they were more than 20 miles away. They weren't ready for that. Or at least what I'm saying is they did not know that. They didn't understand that that's what they were coming to. But they were getting prepared. That's the point. They got prepared with the things that they needed. And they made sure that along the way, as they conversed with the natives, that they found out what else they needed or what they would use or what would help them in their journey. Just imagine if they would have just set out, well, you know, we're going to relax. And it was a hard task to cross that continent. It was work. And when it wasn't dragging up a river, they were walking and carrying heavy weights. Oh, let's just set it out for 3 days. We're so tired, we'll just rest. And they did. Do you guys know that they didn't stop and say, we're going to take a day off? They didn't take a day off. They kept moving. Because they had to get there. Again. And along the way, not only would they not procrastinate, but they would make sure that they got the provisions they needed to make the journey. And they accomplished the task. Therefore, 2 Timothy 2:15, be diligent to present yourselves approved to God, a worker that does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth. Diligence is what's required. Diligence. We need to make sure we're making provisions in order to not be procrastinators. But we also need to see that we must have a sense of urgency. I think that's exactly what the Lewis and Clark's expedition was about too. They understood it was going to take time, but that's why they kept moving. They kept moving forward. They had their folks, their men that would send out on hunting expeditions. They did have some expeditionary movements to explore, but along the way as they explored, they were taking samples, they were taking all kinds of things. They brought things back to Thomas Jefferson and to the National Treasure that nobody knew, at least among the Anglos and the people that lived in the East, had never seen the animals, never saw the plant life, never would even imagine. Nobody knew that there were tens of millions of bison out there on that high plain. Did you imagine? The French had been down there and traded, but nobody even knew the immensity of that number. And they found species of plants and animals that they brought back to, again, to the zoologists and the botanists and the biologists, all kinds of things that were amazing. But they knew along the way they had to get her done. Because their other objective, while they did that, was to get over there. So you're splitting up at times and you're spreading out. And you're doing this and you're doing that. But you're still moving forward. And you're planning that so that you can get there as soon as you can. Now they could not imagine it would take as long to get there. Because again, the mountain was the big obstacle. They never had heard, ever seen anything like the Rockies. And that was the challenge. But they still did it. They had a sense of urgency. And so should we. Notice with me in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 16. Ephesians 5, verse 16. Paul says plainly to us, be careful how you walk. Not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. That screams urgency. That tells us there can't be any procrastination. It's not about later. It's not about tomorrow. It's not about even next week. It's not even really about the next hour. It's the now business. And I don't care if it's about your immediate obedience to the gospel or if it's a matter of the cultivation and development of your faith. Any task that you have to know that it's about urgency. There's no other time better than now. That's what he says. Be careful how you walk. Don't be unwise. There's another thing about the expedition that was amazing. For all the souls that went out there, and yeah, they were hardy outdoorsmen, backwoodsmen. They had seen a lot, but they'd never seen what they were getting ready to see. And they hadn't had to work nearly as hard as they will. You can imagine you got 5 or 6 tons of boat, these call them pirogues. You got 6 men that are dragging them things across the plains once they got out of the water. Carrying them at times, dragging them with provisions, whatever they had in them. And you had this Montana terrain. It was like this. And you're going up and down. You're not got this all flat. And you got to drag that daily. They had no carbs. They had nothing but protein. Lots of it. But they needed it. The men would eat an average of 25 pounds of meat per man per day to survive. And they were still starving. And you'd say, okay. And I look at myself and say, there's no way I could do that. I mean, I know at this age for sure. But these men, 20s, 30s, 40s, some of them, and they worked harder than I did. But I would say even for them, at some point I'm thinking, nah, for the penance I'm going to get or whatever, it ain't worth it. Let's just stop, Captain. I can't go any further. And not a one of them said that. Every one of them said, this is urgent business. They acted as one unit. Nobody fell in and just said, no, I'm not going to do it no more. Not one. They kept going. And they were wise. Did you know what? Their wisdom was so good that not a one of them died except for one. A sergeant died, as it is believed, from appendicitis in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and he's buried up there somewhere. It had nothing to do with the journey. It had everything to do with his health that he could not have controlled, and they didn't have appendectomy surgery, didn't understand all of that, and it bursted, and he dies, and they bury him. And that's about a quarter away on the journey. The rest of those fellows went all the way from St. Louis, all the way to the Pacific Ocean, and spent the winter there and came all the way back as healthy and as fit as a fiddle. Why? Because they were wise. Because they made the most of their time. because they knew the evils of the place they were in. There were certain of those Native Americans that were not so friendly. The Sioux and one, for one, and they were large. The Blackfeet for another, they were fierce. Only the Mandans and the Nez Perce really, really befriended them. And if they hadn't have been for that, and then we got to throw in Sacagawea along with it. It was a challenging task, and they knew the ever-present danger everywhere. Dear friend, to us, we need to look like or act like we're on that great journey, because we are. Spiritually, we're on a journey for our own life's sake. Why? Because the days are truly evil. We got to make the most of our time. We got to walk with circumspectness. We've got to walk with wisdom. We got to do as Paul said to the Colossians in chapter 4 and verse 5. Colossians 4, verse 5. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Now, in that case, he's talking about striving to encourage others to hear you. Just as Paul will say, in general, the days are evil. You walk as a wise man. You make the most of your time. And when it is the opportunity to help another lost soul to gain salvation, we've got to make the most of it. And third, we need to create momentum. Yep, we got to have momentum. Why? Because, you know, you think about it, with procrastination, and it's kind of like that expedition. You're moving. Like I said, let's just say for sake of argument, we're worn out. We're sore. Let's give our muscles a rest. Let's get rested. Let's lay out. And we'll get enough rest and we'll be able to tackle those mountains. By the time they got near Montana and they had to go to the, tried to find the branch of the Missouri that would work to get them across. There were several. They didn't know which way. Oh, let's just rest. Now, they would send out the expeditions, but I can just imagine them saying, let's lay out. Let's just wait, right? What would happen if they did that long enough or often enough? Let's just say they did that every so often, maybe once a month for every 3 or 4 days. Spend a week out, let's say, once a month. They'd lose momentum, wouldn't they? They would have been. They would have been definitely a loss of momentum. And by the way, because the dangers are ever present and they're everywhere out there, guess what? They would become targets. For the days are deed evil. Do you think those Native American tribes who had been scouting and had heard and been reporting to one another in the hunting season would not have been aware of where they were at? And they would have known better than what the expedition knew as far as where they were at. And if you laid out long enough, you'd become a target. There were some near misses with some grizzly bears. There was one sergeant that had to run several days after he had been captured by some Blackfeet. And as they did traditionally, they would send him out and they would chase him on the hunt. They had to hunt him. They didn't kill him. They weren't going to kill him there. They were going to hunt him down. He's on foot. They're on horseback. Just imagine that he felt, oh, I can't do it anymore. Guy barefoot, hardly a stitch on him. In the wilds, he's got grizzlies, he's got Blackfeet after him. What is he going to do? He wants to live. Do you think he slowed down? He kept momentum. He kept traveling. And the story goes, he went for 3 days without sleeping or anything. Hiding, running, and he finally got back to the expedition. Momentum. Just like the runner. He's going to have to build up to that. Just as the race car driver, he's got to work on that. And you can lose the momentum if you don't get busy, if you don't get involved. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3. I think the Philippians are as good an example of this ideal of momentum and creating it. So in our life spiritually, we can do some good things, but you've seen it before. A church will do something or an individual will do something, and they don't follow up with it. They don't, or just don't continue. Stop the task for a while. Don't find the other activities that need to be in connection with that. They lose momentum. Everything sounds good, all fired up. It gets going, get going for a little while, and then just stops. Paul's encouraging the Philippians that are already active to become more so, or to continue, I should say. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in my every prayer for you all. In view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now, so they've been working, they've been participating with him. I don't believe just monetarily, but certainly that was one aspect. But he goes on to say, for I am confident of this very thing. Notice, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus. So God has certainly began a work in them through their adherence to the gospel and their obedience to it. And he has the ability to complete that task in them. But what happens if they don't do anything? What if they stopped? Is he going to be able to complete the task? Is it going to move forward? Is it going to mature? It's not going to complete at all, is it? He says, for it is only right for me to feel this way about you all because I have you in my heart, since both in my imprisonment and the defense of the confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers of grace with me. They have been partakers of that divine grace that has been given through Jesus Christ. For God is my witness how I long for you all with affection of Christ Jesus. But this is what he also says. This is the momentum passage, if you will. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ, having been filled with the fruit of righteousness which comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and the praise of God. He's telling these Philippians, you've done well. You've even participated with me in the gospel. You've shared in my burdens. You have loved me dearly. We are partners. We are fellow workers. You are there. I am over here. But we're doing a good work together. Me in Rome, in prison. You in Philippi, and free. But it ain't enough, is it? I want to encourage you, he says. I want to admonish you. You can't stop, because the Lord needs to complete a work in you. Therefore, I pray that you will abound still more. Like, wait a minute, Paul, I've been doing a lot. Have you ever been there? You've done a whole lot, and you're thinking, you're asking for more? You feel worn out and tired maybe at times. Maybe you think you've accomplished some great things. You think, it's time for my break. Paul says, no. You abound more and more. You take the knowledge and you discern it and you're able to apply it well so that you may be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. You got to create the momentum. We've got to have the momentum. Paul would even say of the church at Corinth, which he'd had some really serious concerns about, by the time he gets to the second letter, he's encouraged that they had taken his advice, that they had listened to him and they had repented. Because he gets a report back from Titus, who he had sent. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and in verse 13. 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 13. For this reason we have been comforted, and besides our comfort, we rejoice even more and more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For if anything that I have boasted to him about you, I will not be put to shame. But as we spoke all things to you in truth, so also our boasting before Titus proves to be the truth. Notice, his affection abounds all the more toward you as he remembers, notice, the obedience of you all, how you received him with fear and trembling. Now you see, Corinth had lost the momentum as you read the first letter. Things had just unwound, hadn't they? But now Paul's encouraged that it can be restarted. So when I say we need to keep the momentum, as we've already looked at with Philippians, maybe we're not like them. Maybe we're more like the Corinthians in that we got to create the momentum. It hasn't really got going. Maybe we had it at one time, but we have stopped and we've slowed down. We've stopped. Nothing's going. We got to start. We got to pick back up and we got to go again. You see? And the same thing was true with these Corinthians. They had to pick up. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 6, he says, "So we urge Titus, that is, he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well." So in other words, Titus' work also had a start, but it had to get completed. He couldn't lose the momentum, you see. That's the picture. We don't need to lose the momentum if we have it. And if we don't, then we need to create the momentum. We've got to start somewhere. And once we start, then we got to keep going. We got to find the tools and the ways to do so, because the stopping won't work. Again, I don't know that we would have had a complete country, a continent. United States might not have existed without their work. I don't know. I don't know what would have happened. Would we eventually obtain that area? It was purchased, I understand that, but I mean as far as settled. Because do you realize what they created? In their determination to get set and go out there and discover and come back, that they created a interest, a passion, and a fervor for the next 5, 6, 7 decades for masses to go out. They started going out. That's where, again, you eventually got all the wagon trains long before the rail and settled that land. Would they have been an interest in doing that and starting? They created a momentum for the filling up of the continent called the United States. Wow. The buzz around it. But what if they hadn't? What if they hadn't went all the way out? What if they had come fallen short? What if they had come back with little to nothing? And what would they have to tell? And what interest would there be in anything? You see how important this was? And by the way, this was exciting, because this is even greater than going to the moon. We knew more about the moon before we went there than we knew about the Pacific coast. We knew nothing about everything on the other side of the Rockies. A few French trappers have been in the Mandan villages in North Dakota. They didn't know anything else. Nobody had seen. But they created an interest. They created a powerful momentum. And so can we in our faith. So can we, not only individually, but together. So I come back and ask yourself this. Ask yourself this. What am I losing by putting this off? In other words, what am I losing by putting off whatever God has given me to do as a child of God? What am I losing by putting off a development and a strengthening of my faith? What am I losing by putting off my salvation because I'm sitting on the fence, as it were? I got all kinds of objections as to why I shouldn't obey the gospel. What am I losing? Everything. Mark 8 and verse 35. "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." So Jesus says plainly, here's the deal. You want eternal salvation. You want life everlasting. Then you got to give up yourself. You got to lose yourself in me. You got to lose yourself for everything that I am. Now that's a tall bill. I agree with you. That's challenging. And I agree that many are not up to the task, and that's why many will not receive life everlasting. There will be many that will play around with this ideal, religion, and so on and so forth, and they will do a few things, and they'll do this and that, and they just hope by the skin of their teeth, maybe, that the Lord will say, "Yeah, come on in." You know, I've been to a few places in my life in which I was running late for, and the persons were going to close up, whatever, a restaurant or whatever, but they were gracious to let me in anyway. Let me tell you this, that is not going to happen in eternal life. Do not get that picture in your head. Don't even begin to think that if you don't lose yourself and you just kind of play around with Christianity and you just think a few things are just fine and that'll be all right, that somehow Jesus will say, yeah, that okay. You did better than most and you're good. Whoever wishes to save his life, we're all the time in the saving the life business, we'll protect self, won't we? You're not going to put yourself unnecessarily in harm's way. And you want to preserve whatever you have. We go to the doctor for that? And fine, get that. We're going to do everything we can to preserve this life. But Jesus says plainly, if it's about me preserving who I am and my place in life, and I'm not willing to lose it for him, then I will not have eternity in the end. In other words, I'm losing everything. Can I replace what I'm losing with anything better? That's the next question we asked earlier. Can you, okay, let's say, okay, I don't want that. That is too difficult. I can't handle that. I don't want anything to do with that. Okay, what's next? What's option? What's better? Anyway, there are some things that if you have two choices, that there is one that might be as good as the other. In other words, you don't really lose. You're willing to take some easier route or something cheaper or whatever the case may be, and that's acceptable. Because it gets you something that you want, that while you may have preferred the other, that you really haven't lost a whole lot. I get it. But not with this. Not with what we're talking about. If I procrastinate and say, wait a minute, I don't know. I'm sitting here, I don't know if I can, I lose. Can I replace it? Nope. He says I can't. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Think about it. Now that's the you're talking about the hyperbole earlier, the exaggeration. But I mean, if it's possible. But just imagine, if a person could actually gain everything, not just what they want, that would be the lesser of this, but I mean literally you have the world, it's yours. What if you got it all? Jesus was offered that in the temptation by Satan. He's offered that. Now you and I may never get that, but that's the point. It doesn't matter. What if you could get it all? Is it worth it? Is there anything better? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? That's rhetorical. It's already determined. There isn't anything better. Neither one of these questions demand much thought. They don't take time to figure out. Can I replace what I'm losing with anything better? Ask yourself, for what will I give in exchange for my soul? What can I bargain with? And finally, things got a speed. All right. And can I do without those things that I didn't do? What I didn't do, can I do without them? Mark 8:38. For whoever is ashamed of me and my word in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Can I do without God's glory? Can I get by without it? Can I simply just be shamed, even mildly so, and be accepted? You see, there's not an option. So procrastination is not an option. Putting anything off, again, whether it's my obedience or whether it's my faith and the development in that, I can't. It's not an option. I know many will. I'm not talking about many as in the world. Yeah, many's going to do that if I wanted to make that case. Many in the religious world, again, are playing around with it as well. And so certainly they think they have some, or they have it, but they are doing it, of course, in their way, do it my way, right? But I would also argue, even we who are part of the Lord's church, especially, because here it is, even if you've obeyed the gospel, are you procrastinating in your faith? Galatians chapter 5 and verse 7, you were running well, he says. This Galatian church, remember in chapter 1, he said to them in verse 6, I marvel that you're so far removed from the gospel of Jesus Christ and so soon. And you got another gospel, which is really not another. You're perverted. By chapter 5 and verse 7, he says, you've ran well. Now what's keeping you? What's hindering you? What's keeping you from obeying the truth? What's keeping you from sticking with it? And that's the question I ask of myself and of you who are of the Lord's church. If you're not running well, if that's the case, what's hindering you? What's keeping you from running well? Oh, you can give me lots of reasons, but it won't work, will it? I can give you a lot of reasons, but it won't work. I've got to decide. This question is very telling. I've got to decide that this question tells me that I am in danger of losing my life forevermore. And then what about you who are not a Christian? What about it? Remember the Ethiopian eunuch. Remember what he said? They go along the road after he's been teaching him of Jesus and baptism from Isaiah. And they see this water, and the eunuch said, "Look, look, see, there's water. What's preventing me from being baptized? What's preventing you from being baptized? Why are you procrastinating? Why do I procrastinate? Why do any of us not do what we should be doing?" Oh, there's lots of reasons, but now, really, what we have discovered by the end of the story, there ain't any of them that I need to spend any time on. Because I could sit here and talk about all the reasons all day long, and we haven't accomplished anything because we're still in the same situation, the same boat, the same hot water. We've got to decide right now we're done with not doing anything. We're going to change that all right now. Otherwise, you're in danger of searing the conscience, one, and continuing the procrastination game, because that can continue on and on and on, and I promise you. And then you're also, likewise, in danger of the Lord returning before you ever, ever decide. Will you obey the gospel this morning? Come, believing and repenting, confessing Jesus as the Lord and Christ, and being immersed in water for the remission of your sins. And if you've done so, don't procrastinate any longer. Don't wait. Become more faithful. Start getting the momentum back. Confess and repent if you need to. If it's something we need to help you with, let us help you. But whatever your need is, please come as we stand and sing the invitation song.